Welcome, welcome. So nice to see you all. I've practicing all these days together. I've also had an opportunity to meet with everybody, except for the auditors, but what a pleasure it is to share this practice and to practice together. I see some of you adjusting this volume. Hopefully the volume's okay. Yeah, Nikki nods her head. Okay, thank you. Abraham gives a thumbs up. Okay, good. So Nikki and I have been talking about with this practice about how we're extending the circles, these concentric circles, spheres, getting bigger and bigger. I like to do that a little bit also, but maybe in a different way, kind of like look in the bigger picture. And that is to look at metta practice, loving kindness practice, forgiveness practice, this cultivating this warm-heartedness. I'd like to put it in the context of our life and in the context of Buddhist practice. Put it in these bigger contexts, these bigger avenues or settings, and just talk about it a little bit. Right? We could do a whole retreat just on this part, but I'll start with some of this, and that is, maybe we could just say, well, what is this whole idea of Buddhist practice? And I'm going to define it or talk about it as this movement, this intention, this aspiration to go towards greater understanding. Greater understanding sometimes shows up as understanding ourselves better, understanding others better, and insight. Having some greater understanding of the way that this causes and conditions come together to create all of our experiences, and this recognition of, well, how could it be otherwise? So this Buddhist practice has this movement towards greater understanding, but it's not just about greater understanding, because if it were, Nikki and I would just send you some PowerPoint slides and reading and say, here, read this, and the quiz will be on Saturday. Right? So of course it's not just that. It's also this movement towards greater and greater ease and well-being. And Nikki and I have been talking about that too. It's kind of like the harmonizing, the collecting, the coming together of our practice and different aspects of ourselves. And this, and the well-being that's associated with that, and using this well-being, this collectedness, as a way for us to cultivate loving kindness. As well as recognizing that loving kindness is a way in which we cultivate this well-being and collectedness. So it definitely goes together. And we could say that Buddhist practice is also about the ending of suffering, the ending of dukkha, the ending of dissatisfaction, the sense that things just aren't quite right. We know this. We know that the Buddha talked about suffering and the end of suffering. And we know that awakening, liberation, is described as the ending of suffering. So Buddhist practice is this movement towards greater understanding, greater well-being, and less difficulties. Less suffering, less dukkha, less dissatisfaction. And there's a number of ways that we can think about Buddhist practice, and I'm just going to offer one. It's not the only one, and there's different ways we can do this, but one way is to think about there are cultivation practices, things that we develop, that we build, that we strengthen, which we've spent a whole week working on in a really beautiful way. And I've been touched by how you have all been engaged with this practice, with this. Sometimes it's not easy, but to hang in there as best you can with this, we could call it a cultivation practice. Like, it takes a little bit of, you know, effort, this hanging in there and planting seeds, allowing things to grow, or allowing ourselves to notice sometimes when there's a sense of stuckness and they're not growing also. But so Buddhist practice, one part of it is this cultivation, which we've been doing. And we could say another part is this idea of letting go. This releasing, this shedding, this renouncing, abandoning. You know, there's different words that we use, and there's different words that make sense in different settings. And so, as I said, we've been doing cultivation practices, which are beautiful, really beautiful, to give ourselves the space and the time to nourish and take care of our hearts and minds, and hopefully our bodies too, you know, taking care of ourselves. It's really important. And sometimes desperately needed. Sometimes we abandon ourselves and difficulties, or maybe we just have a habit of, you know, maybe thinking that something outside ourselves is more important. Something outside ourselves is maybe less difficult, less painful. Something outside ourselves has the answers. And there might be all these ways in which we are unknowingly abandoning ourselves. And so to spend this time to be cultivating, developing our hearts, what a beautiful thing to do. I like to do this thought experiment and all kinds of things, but maybe I invite you to join me in this, but just imagine what the world would be like if all of us were cultivating loving kindness, were nourishing our hearts, nourishing our minds in this way with tenderness, with care. Like, what a world this would be. So our doing this practice is a way in which we can help create the world in which we want to live in. Help create the world in which we can demonstrate to others, demonstrate to ourselves what is possible when there's a sense of love. And there's a sense of warmth and not feeling like we have to get it elsewhere, but this boundlessness and unconditionality that we've been talking about, when the sense that it is available, and that maybe we don't have access to it all the time, but even to just know that it exists and to have had the experience, it can move that direction towards boundlessness and unconditionality. And wow, what a beautiful thing. And so part of the way that Nikki and I have been talking about this is to use this idea of about planting seeds. And there are in so many ways, right, this analogy is apt, but it takes effort to plant seeds, right? We have to till the soil. We have to dig the little holes. We have to learn, like, okay, do these types of seeds, do they like to be 6 inches apart, or do they need to be 18 inches apart? And how often do they need to be watered? And, you know, I'm not a farmer or a gardener, but I know that it's not just so simple as just throwing some seeds out. I'm like, okay, I'm done. So this recognition that it does take some effort, and that we're planting the seeds that allow for some growth, allow for some kind of strength. This way, you know, that metta has the strength and the softness, has both. Sometimes we might think of strength as only having an edge to it that's uncomfortable, or somehow it gets misused. But to start to recognize that the strength from metta has this warmth and softness and is no less powerful. We might even say it's more powerful, because it has the flexibility, it can bend. It doesn't have the brittleness that sometimes something that a blade might have, or something like this. But this certain type of growth is allowed to this inner stability, this bigness. I remember years ago, quite some time ago now, that when I first heard Gil Fronstall give this little talk, I thought it was silly and maybe even a little bit, I don't know, it seemed a little bit too simplistic and cute and trite. But I've grown to really love it, because I don't know why exactly. It somehow, for me, it speaks to me. So this is something that perhaps many of you have heard Gil give this little vignette more than once, right, over the years, right? We've heard this. And this analogy about a fly, just like we can imagine this house fly, common enough. And this house fly, if it were to land on an ant, just a little ant, that's a big deal for this poor little ant, right? Right, that's, you know, ants, flies are bigger than ants, and what a difficulty that is. But if this very same housefly, the precise exact one, were then to land on an elephant, not a big deal. The exact same fly, right? And so sometimes in our lives, we feel like ants, and maybe sometimes we feel like elephants, but this practice, this strength, this growth is maybe with metta is to help us maybe feel more like an elephant. And just swish the tail and the fly goes and goes somewhere else. Maybe it's, you know, don't even notice. So that's about cultivation practices, help us turn into elephants, if you will. But we need both cultivation and letting go practices. And we might interpret Suzuki Roshi's famous expression, and I remember that Nikki said it at the beginning. I'm pretty sure she did. This famous quote, so like, you're perfect and you could use a little improvement. So this idea of you're perfect, maybe implicit in that is let go of anything that makes you think otherwise. And you can use a little improvement and a little bit of cultivation, development. So So I know this is a gross oversimplification, but sometimes it's helpful to have these generalizations about practice. We need both cultivation and letting go. And it's not uncommon for people to have a preference for one or the other. And for some people, this to have this idea, cultivate or develop, it just feels awful. Feels like it's like, in some ways, it's offensive to that there's any idea that they need to be different than how they are. They don't want to hear about cultivation, developing. Or they might feel like it's just exhausting to think about. Like, I'm just barely getting by in my life. And then I hear this idea that I have to cultivate something. It just feels like, I'm sorry, it's just too much. And different times in our life, different times in our practice, we might have those feelings. And for some people, sometimes this idea of letting go feels so uncomfortable. It's like, I'm just barely holding on. They might have this feeling. And what are you telling me to let go? I can't let go. I'm just holding on as, you know, barely hanging in there. I'm doing all I can to stay above the water, or I'm hanging on by my fingernails. And so just to recognize that sometimes we have an inclination towards one or the other, or we have an aversion towards one or the other. And to also introduce that, you know, this distinction I'm making in some ways is artificial. In some ways, it's helpful. I mean, sometimes these two practices, cultivating and letting go, are completely indistinguishable. An obvious case is, or an obvious way is, with this idea of generosity. Generosity is a practice we can cultivate, and we cultivate it by letting go. So, like, there's really not a separation. And for those of you who are familiar with the suttas and a lot of the Buddhist teachings, know that generosity is very often the first teaching that the Buddha gives to people. For this very reason, is because it has both qualities in there, and it's readily available, accessible, doesn't require some great philosophical construct. It's like, okay, just be generous to ourselves and to others. And this is an integral part of Buddhist practice. It morphs and shapes and takes different forms, whether we're generous to ourselves, generous to others, whether we're generous with material objects or just time, or we're just generous by giving the benefit of the doubt. And during this week of metta practice, of course, there's been letting go happening while we've been cultivating. We might have let go of certain ideas about ourselves, ideas about others. Cultivating metta for ourselves, we might have stumbled upon or discovered some ideas that we have about ourselves that aren't helpful. Most likely aren't entirely true, but we've maybe solidified them in some way. And so with the metta practice, we've been interrupting some of the solidifications, which allows some letting go of some ideas we have about ourselves. Or maybe when doing metta for the person with whom we are currently having difficulties, the person with whom we are having difficulties right now, maybe we had some ideas about them that just naturally we kind of let go as we started to use some of the practices and to drop in some of their reflections. like, oh yeah, just like me. I wish to be happy. They're not like terrible through and through. They're just trying to find their way. And they have people who love them and care for them. So cultivation practices can be like a snake. I'm bringing in these different animals. But a snake, like as it grows, just naturally sheds its skin. So maybe this occurs to me. Maybe on the way from an ant to an elephant, there's the snake phase where just skin, we just, you know, just naturally gets shed. Just letting go just happens. It's just a natural thing. And so as we cultivate some of the inner qualities, we no longer feel committed to particular views. We no longer feel entangled with or enmeshed with particular views about ourselves or about others. But instead, we've gotten a little bit stronger, a little bit bigger in this analogy, a little bit happier, a bit more well-being. And with that growth comes a different perspective. And these different perspectives, there's just, we recognize, oh, I don't need this other perspective anymore. So in this way, these two, cultivation, letting go, they're really integrated and we need both. Sometimes we emphasize one or the other. Sometimes we have an attraction to one or the other. But there's one thing that also I want to point to is that sometimes it doesn't make sense to let go because we have this feeling that there isn't anything to support us if we let go. We don't have a sense of stability or some strength holding us up. And again, using a little story that Gefrunstall has used, that is this idea of that if it's raining and you're downpour and you have an umbrella with you, been keeping you dry, not soaking wet in the downpour, that's not the time to give up the umbrella when it's protecting you or helping you. It's better to let go after it stops raining, so to speak. But neither does it make sense to carry this umbrella around with you forevermore because it helped you in that time when there was this real downpour, when there was this deluge of rain. Instead, we just leave the umbrella at home, know that it's there if we need it, and we pick it up when we need it, and we put it down when we don't. So sometimes with Buddhist practices, we talk about the importance of letting go. And to be sure, letting go is important. But we're not always ready, and it's not always the right time to let go of different identities, for example. Partly what we've been working with, maybe not directly, but with this practice we've been doing. For example, roles that we have. Parent, helper, student or teacher. Some of these roles. Maybe it doesn't make sense that we just let go of all of them. And then we feel maybe a little bit lost. Who am I? But sometimes when it does become clear that we're clinging to an identity, and it might be a role, or it might be an ability we have, or an ability we don't have, or we've built up this sense of self around who we are, and it's helpful for us. We've figured out how to be in the world with it and how to navigate and negotiate the world with this identity. And certainly, I'm reflecting back, there was a time in my life when I was very much invested in this idea of myself as a scientist. And it was hard for me when I made this first transition, still in my role as a scientist, but out of the laboratory and now more in an office. For me, I was one of those people who wore a white coat and hung out with test tubes all day. And then just to have this big shift, I'm like, wait, who am I? And I couldn't make sense of the world. And it was really difficult. So there are times when we feel like letting go, if we put something down, let go of it, if we let go too early and we have nothing to replace it, maybe that's how I should say it, then we can feel lost. Then we can feel like we've lost our stability, lost our way, lost a sense of ballast. It's something entirely different to let go of an identity if we have this sense of inner strength, inner confidence. This trust of like, okay, I know how to be in the world in a number of different ways. And maybe you've noticed that this week of metta practice is a way in which we have been cultivating, maybe like there's so many different ways that we can describe it. And for some of us, it's different than for others. We're not all having the exact same experience. But this recognition of maybe there's a greater understanding. Is this touched into maybe some sense of some well-being? Maybe a little bit of collectedness? And as that starts to become more familiar, as we find that we're able to touch into that, in different settings. Maybe as a consequence of having spent this week with it, it becomes a little bit more accessible to us. Then it becomes a real refuge. It becomes a support. And it becomes a guide for how to be in the world. And in that way, it gives us some stability. And having this guide, having this sense of what's possible, having this sense of warmth and well-being, even if it was only fleetingly, even if it was just a little bit more than when you first arrived on this retreat, this creates the conditions in which letting go is easier. In which perhaps it just naturally happens, like the snake shedding its skin. And for me, sometimes when I'm trying to describe loving kindness, sometimes I don't know exactly which words to use, and I find myself using kind of vague words. And one of those vague words that I like to use is spaciousness. I find myself kind of like doing this type of gestures with my hands, making, reaching out or something like this. So loving kindness is this sense of spaciousness. And so there's a way in which this same gesture I'm doing with my hands is also the gesture of letting go. Is this way, this spaciousness that is metta, it's also some letting go. And this letting go is, we might say, is one of the most important parts of Buddhist practice. And we can describe awakening as a really radical letting go. This abandoning, this releasing of greed, hatred, and delusion. Greed, hatred, and delusion. Part of how we let go of those three is to cultivate the opposites. The opposite of hatred. The opposite of ill will is metta. So in this way, loving kindness, cultivating loving kindness is helping, supporting a letting go of ill will, hatred, supporting our movement towards awakening, greater ease, ending of suffering. And so this idea of cultivating as a support for letting go, when that they definitely work together. And sometimes it's useful to think about practices to put them in these two buckets. Sometimes it doesn't make sense to do that, and sometimes it does. But I want to point to you that I talked about metta in the greater context of our life and of our practice. And then there's a way, you know, even that distinction is artificial too, right? But there's a real obvious place in which daily life practice and Buddhist practice intersect, if we're going to make these distinctions again, right? I feel like I have to give all these qualifiers, but that metta, cultivation of metta, is part of a family of practices for cultivating. And these practices that we cultivate in our daily life. Some of you will know these. This is the paramis. This word parami, like the perfections, is this related to this word of completeness or taking the furthest or highest state possible or perfection. And these are qualities that most often, not exclusively, but get developed in our daily life that are a support for practice, a support for awakening. I'm just going to list these paramis. I'm not going to talk about all of them, but many of you are familiar with this list. Generosity is the first. And then ethical behavior, renunciation, wisdom, energy, patience, truthfulness, resolve, loving kindness, and equanimity. And so metta as a parami, as a perfection, really highlights this the form of love that's characterized by freedom. These paramis are, you know, a support for freedom. So, and it's characterized that don't involve clinging, that don't involve grasping, which we'll recognize is the opposite of letting go. And this clinging gets expressed in so many different ways, but This non-clinging allows us to be with the irritating, the unfair, the messy, without contracting or clinging. So all of these qualities, all 10 of these paramis, are a support for this letting go. So cultivating the paramis are some ways, a way to support this letting go. But we can get out of balance if we are emphasizing just cultivation and development. And to be sure, there are a lot of sutta passages that talk about, you know, effort and diligence and perseverance and cultivation, right? But it also, I want to make sure that we keep it in balance too, that sometimes implicit in this idea of cultivating is this idea of inadequacy. I have to cultivate because I don't have enough. That's not the direction we're going. I appreciate so much Suzuki Roshi's saying there is the, you're perfect. I don't know what the quote is exactly. This is the, my paraphrase. You're perfect just the way you are, and you could use a little improvement. So is there a way that we could hold both of that? Because we are, I would say, it's kind of like a culture, very pragmatic and goal-oriented, and we put effort into our jobs, our educations, our roles, our vacations. And we expect to get results, particular outcomes, as a consequence of this effort. But when it comes to training the mind and training the heart, it's not quite so straightforward. It's more like just planting seeds. And so when we aren't getting the results we expect, we may have this idea, we have to try harder, strive more, strain more. And we just sometimes fall into like just more effort is needed. So this is a way that we can get a little bit out of balance if we're only about cultivating. Just to be aware that we all have preferences, we all have strengths, and we need a mixture of both cultivating and letting go. And this shows up in our daily life practices with the paramis, as well as other just specific ways of practicing metta in daily life. For example, is there a way that just recognizing that appreciation and gratitude support loving kindness? So just during our days, just experimenting with noticing gratitude. Gratitude that we have, gratitude that others have, and just tuning into, like, yeah, that sense of appreciation that helps nourish a sense of loving kindness. It helps nourish this kind of openness of heart, this warmth inside. That's one way to practice with metta in daily life, just noticing when appreciation and gratitude just naturally arise. Another way is to appreciate within ourselves. We have good intentions, qualities, behaviors, ways we're showing up in the world that are skillful, helpful, wise, wholesome. Can we appreciate ourselves, some of the good things that we do? Maybe they're natural things that we do all the time, but we just tend to be dismissive of them. But one way to help support loving kindness is to notice these things in ourselves. Can we be our own friends? And then to notice, times when goodwill, benevolence, kindness just shows up, and you just find yourself. And these moments arise, and when they disappear, just notice. We all have times in which we're kind and warm-hearted, maybe towards ourselves, towards others, and just noticing, giving them a little bit of attention is a way in which we can really support them, like letting them, getting some real familiarity in the mind and the body, what it feels like when there's just these moments of goodwill, these moments of care, these moments of warmth. Just allowing ourselves to feel them, recognize them, not to be so quick to dismiss them. And then with that is also to notice when there's these minor moments of irritation, impatience, resentment, or ill will. And then just gaining some familiarity with the difference. What does ill will feel like? What does loving kindness feel like? What are the conditions in which these two different things, these two different responses arise? And if it feels appropriate and is accessible, when these moments of irritation show up, can we drop in some loving kindness? And I'll say for me, if I'm feeling irritated with somebody at that moment, it's difficult for me to have loving kindness precisely for that individual. However, loving kindness is available wherever it's available. The lovable being, perhaps the easy being, right? So it doesn't necessarily need to be exactly in the same context within which we're feeling that irritation. Just this idea of that we're interrupting some of this momentum of ill will and irritation with some loving kindness. Another way of just practicing loving kindness in daily life, and maybe this is something we already do, but where I'm going to reframe it a little bit differently, maybe different than how we think about it, is if we consider that if the heart is full with love and care and warmth, how that shows up in the world. One way it shows up in the world is with ethical behavior, just non-harming, following the precepts. In this way, we not only care and love others and help them feel safety, but it's a way to take care of ourselves too. So it's another way in which loving kindness can show up in daily life, is just with behaving ethically. And it turns out that honoring the precepts can be really a profound and subtle practice. Some of you know that at IMC we're teaching this year-long course. It's called The Equivalence of Ethics and Enlightenment. And I've heard from so many people, like, this just turned out to be such a rich and deep and really fruitful practice to really explore ethical behavior in a way that just from the outset, it might feel boring and dry, and like the last thing you want to do is to think about ethics, but how just nourishing and deep it turns out to be. Because it is intimately related to care and respect, which of course, loving kindness is intimately related with care and respect too. So this idea of cultivating and letting go, this idea of formal meditation practice and practice in our daily life, all of them to provide us support, to provide some, maybe the wind behind this movement, towards greater ease, greater well-being, greater peace, the diminishment of suffering, the ending of suffering, so that we can let go. This radical letting go that is awakening, and this letting go of everything. Even everything that we've cultivated. Letting go of that too. So let's just sit for a minute. So thank you. Thank you for your practice.